Dirt and Sprague on Football Friday on 1080 The Fan.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea with a rollicking song. He sweeps along, swaggering boisterously.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app. Download the Odyssey app, follow 1080 The Fan, and enable push notifications to get the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and more.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in hour number two. Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2, and of course, YouTube. Obviously, we know what today is. It's Friday. It's a Football Friday. It's a Civil War Football Friday.
We're going to beat their ass.
In week three.
Feels normal, doesn't it? At least the weather's helped us out a little bit the last 2 days. A little bit cooler, a little bit of rain. It feels a little more like the end of November, but...
I was going to wear my Beav hoodie. I don't have a lot of Beaver gear. I have this Benny hat I'm wearing, and I have a Beaver hoodie because I largely hate the Nutria logo. I think it's the worst, and I don't know how they haven't pivoted out, but... I was going to wear my hoodie, and then I'm like, it's too hot.
It's going to be 70-something degrees
I'm
today.
I'm wearing a black T-shirt. As far as I go, I'll wear the team uniform color. They're going black. It's going to be an orange out, so that'll look kind of cool aesthetically.
Oh, a black jersey, orange out in the stadium is what we're doing?
I think the most surprising thing of what you just said, Oregon's wearing team colors this weekend. Kudos
they are.
To them.
Yeah,
they're
are.
Not wearing gray. They're not wearing, you know, black or orange. Good for them. Glad they're wearing green.
You guys got sports bras on this weekend? You do anything like that? No?
If it means we beat you.
whatever. Justin Roper ain't walking through that locker room, buddy.
No, players decided on the all blacks.
I think the all black on the field with the orange out will look cool. Oregon wearing the green will always stand out. So that's what makes that. It's not just the in-state stuff. I think the aesthetics of team colors being so different also makes it look appealing.
Well, and my team has actually turned back the clock. They actually have real school colors as their official uniforms this year.
They're not wearing those Cal jerseys.
Cal jerseys. We're dressing up as like the Duck. We got old school jerseys, and I can't wait to see the white ones. They look awesome online.
I think of all my things, because I don't largely watch a lot of Oregon games and go, oh, they lose. I just kind of watch for the show. Those are the two games that, like, I'm really glad they lost them. I'm really glad I watched them in person lose to Washington by 70 with those Cal uniforms. And then they dressed as a duck and lost to Colorado. I'm like, I'm glad you lost them. Wear your school colors. Stop out thinking the room here.
I'm glad they did, too, because it got Mark Helfrich fired. That was all process, all part of the plan.
Dirt was the only happy Duck fan in 2016 watching Oregon State run it down Oregon's
throat. I knew he was going to get fired.
He knew it was going to get Helfrich fired.
We needed that. If he would have won that game, they would have found a way to hang on for another year. Well, he's got Herbert. He would have stuck around. And who knows where the program's at right now if you make that call.
Dan Lanning on with Primetime yesterday, as he is every Thursday at 4 o'clock. He was asked about Oregon State. We got a Civil War this weekend, Dirt. Oregon coming in 2-0, but feeling a little shaky, especially among the offensive line. Oregon State coming in 2-0, and pretty much have, you know, ran the ball on both opponents. They dominated San Diego State. Here was Dan Lanning on this Oregon State team compared to others.
Well, I think they still look like a team that has an identity. You know, I think that's something I always think about when I think of Oregon State is, you know, the job that they do of putting themselves in position to win games by, you know, not being the flavor of the week team, right? They clearly figure out their strengths, and they do a good job leaning into it, and it seems like Coach Bray's done a great job with that again this year.
He also talked about Oregon State's rushing attack. Hankerson and Jam Griffin are top 10 rushers. They're having a great season, that duo. He talked about how their running attack compares to Boise. Is it similar to what Ashton Jaynty and Boise were showing a week ago?
No, there's some similarities. You know, they're both teams use 12 personnel, which is going to give you longer three and, you know, four-man services. They both like the duo play and stretch play. So there's some similarities. And they have two really good capable backs as well.
You know, all the talk about offensive line, and is it Harper? Is it Bedford back? Who is it, Pickard, or is it Poncho at center? All those conversations that have happened all week on this station from 6 a.m. to 7 o'clock. And I think my conclusion is this boils down to Oregon State being able to run the football. That's probably my number one. I am wondering if Oregon's offensive line is going to look similar to what they have the previous 2 weeks. But I think to make this a game, to have an upset or to have a nail biter, It comes down to Oregon State's ability to run the football.
Agree 100%. If you tell me that Oregon's offense is stupid and shoots itself in the foot and has penalties and is clunky at times, like you had issues at home, man. You're going into a tough environment. You don't think communication's going to be a problem. I'm hopeful that Bedford is going to play, but I also am not one of these people that looks at Bedford like he's a top five NFL draft pick and this is going to solve everything. You have other issues on your offensive line, and so it's going to take you some time to get there. I hope they look better this week than they have in the first 2 weeks, but if you tell me they struggle a bit offensively, I'm not surprised. I have very little trust in Oregon's offense right now. Very little. They're capable of explosive plays because they have incredibly talented skill players on the outside. Mm-hmm. And you give them one-on-one matchups, like they're going to take advantage of it. And they showed that last week against Boise. But when you force them to put together a long drive, they're going to do something stupid. That's just what they've done for the first 2 weeks of the season. Hope I'm wrong on that, but I need to see it before I'm going to believe it. I brought this up earlier in the week, and I think it's the only question I really have in this game. How effectively can Oregon State run the football against Oregon? I know it's easy to look at Jenty and what he did last week and say, well, Oregon's defense is struggling. And Dan Lanning got pissed when Mike Jorgensen asked him a similar line question. But I do think it's a valid point. Like, Oregon did a really good job outside of two runs of bottling him up. Now, the stat line's a stat line because he didn't bottle him up for two of those runs, and he broke him for 70 yards. But when you hold one of the best backs in the country on, like, 12 of his 25 carries to 3 yards or fewer, there's something there. Oregon has two of the top three defensive linemen in terms of quarterback pressures on the year. Derek Harmon leads the country in quarterback pressures mm-hmm. 2 weeks into the season. Jordan Burch is off to a great start. He's at 11 through two games, and Harmon's at 13. So I'm a firm believer in this Oregon defense. I thought they showed you at times what they were absolutely capable of last week. And I just think the biggest question about Oregon State is their quarterback and their passing game. And so if you can make them one-dimensional, if you take away their strength of running the football, it's just a really hard uphill battle for them offensively. And I'm sure Gunderson has a couple of things in his pocket, some trick plays, some deep shots, some play-action shots. Like he's going to throw a wrinkle at Oregon that they haven't seen yet on film. I can almost guarantee that. But is it something that they can consistently and reliably do throughout the course of the game if Oregon is able to bottle up the run game?
Our producer left. Did he go pee?
He's taking a pee again. Yeah, he's taking a leak.
52-year-old bladders.
He's listening in the bathroom right now as he takes a whiz.
Definitely is. He's just standing at the urinal. Oh,
you guys, shut up.
They're talking about me, yeah. Going number one.
Yeah, I'm taking a leak.
Oregon State's missing an offensive lineman. We got that announcement early this week. We talked about that. And so they're going to look to replace their guard. And so how they do that and how effective it's going to be. For all the questions of Oregon's offensive line and the concerning nature of blitz pickup or Gabriel recognizing things, Dirt, I totally don't want to I don't want to overlook that. It's an obvious problem. Oregon still scored 37. Now, they took two special teams touchdowns to get to the 37.
They did, but there's no guarantee they don't score on offense on either of those possessions, too. That's the other part.
And the explosives, I think, still lead or lend that offense to be dangerous, even with shaky offensive line play. But I will say, if Oregon State comes in down a guard and they're able to effectively handle clock, that's what they're going to do. Gundy said this in summer. I think we talked about this. Hey, what's your offensive philosophy? Do whatever it takes to win.
Yeah.
He doesn't
just
get in the
win, baby.
Stuff.
Just run the ball and play defense.
He's not talking about stats. People are asking him, hey, explosives and this and that. And like he's like, don't care. Just win. That's all I want to do. I just want to win. And that's all that matters to me. And so it's going to be about controlling the clock, keeping that defense on the field to tire them out, and keeping that Oregon offense, which is capable of explosives, off the field as well. This is a massive game for both. However, because of the way things are set up in this stupid college football climate, Oregon State can lose this game.
Oh, you guys have no pressure.
Rebound.
You have no pressure this weekend.
I kind of feel the same
you
way.
You have nothing to lose.
And I feel like Oregon, this is the table setter, right? We said this after Idaho. Well, what you are against Boise, and after this, well, then I'm... But people are back to this point. I saw Ryan Horvath of the BetQL Network say, I'm taking Oregon in the points, and if they don't do it, I'm out on them the rest of the year. Starting now. It's week three. I saw another take that was, I'm forgetting who it was. It might have been Herbstreit. I think it was Herbstreit on McAfee. Oregon looks like a team that isn't hungry the way they weren't hungry last year. And I thought that was a valid point. Mm-hmm. You're hearing this about Oregon this week, and if they're shaky, they can win, but if they're shaky and the same problems persist, you're going to look at Oregon and you're going to go, maybe 8-4, 9-3 team with all of the uncertainty that's happened to them in non-conference.
Yeah, I mean, I what I would say where I'm at is I've already adjusted, you know, the thoughts going into the year is this is one of the best teams in the country. And they have shown you nothing 2 weeks into the season that they're one of the best teams in the country. Nothing.
Yeah.
And so that's where my expectations have changed. Now, in terms of win-loss record, that's the unique part is that their schedule is not overly challenging when you look through it. Like, when you go on the road to Wisconsin and Michigan later in the year, are they? I mean, I'm not. Those aren't guaranteed layup
Michigan's
wins.
Michigan's defensive line, if your offensive line looks questionable, is terrifying.
Sure, Michigan, I don't think can score 20 points on anybody. They barely got there against Fresno State.
Might be a 13-10 game.
Take the under in that game, and it's Iowa football now. Let's punt and play defense, and who makes the first mistake wins. Like, I, it's hard even if they eke out another win to give you a score prediction because they get a bye, then they get UCLA, then they get Michigan State. Like, those are games that you can win without being at your best as well, and then you could be 5-0 eking out 5 wins.
Agree.
But it's just, that's the hard thing with the record part. But I have already gotten there in terms of the adjustment of the ceiling of what this team is capable of. I hope that I am wrong, and they show me this weekend this is where it all clicks. Maybe going on the road is what it takes. Maybe Bedford being back does solidify the offensive line. Maybe they just decide, you know, as a team, how about when something good happens, we don't do literally the stupidest thing humanly possible, and we actually put a team away. If we got Oregon State on the ropes, how about we don't drop a ball or fumble a snap or do something ridiculously dumb to allow them hope to get back into this game? That would leave me very encouraged after the weekend, but I have already had to 2 weeks into the season change where I think the ceiling of this team is because, like, at some point you have to show me who you're capable of being. And they have not done it 2 weeks into the year. And if they don't do it again this week, even if they win, I just it's going to solidify that opinion for me.
Yeah, and I should clarify, I don't actually think they're going to be 8-4. I agree with your schedule point. Like, you could eke out wins. You should be, like, Michigan State, I don't care how shaky you look. I'm taking Oregon to cover. Michigan State's not been good. They're undefeated, but they were lucky to beat Maryland. What I'm more saying is you're going to view them as if they're that team, even though their record might be 10-2.
They could be 10-2 with 10 uncomfortable wins.
Right. And so we're going somewhere, but you're not going to be excited about picking them. It's kind of more what I'm talking about.
No, here, and so. I actually love the point from Herb Street. And I don't know, I saw that yesterday on McAfee where there's just a missing fight. Like, just go punch somebody in the face. Go hit somebody.
Is that leadership? Because
I don't know, man.
I don't know how to quantify some of this stuff. We're not in the locker room. I know Lanning's been very fiery this week. You heard it on the coaches show, as you mentioned. And I don't think this is just, well, they lost Bo Nix. It kind of makes me wonder, how are you not as hungry, given the experience that's coming back, mixed with the portal guys you brought in that have experience? Is that a leadership thing? I don't know what that stems from, because this team out west, Doc, made me think this team was all about leadership and accountability. And they're undefeated, to be fair.
Yeah, they haven't lost yet.
And they may house Oregon State this weekend. We'll see. But when you say things like they don't seem as hungry, I can't help, as a football fan and just somebody who watches this for a job, I can't help but wonder, is that a leadership thing? Like, I don't know how to explain that hunger. I'd imagine this roster wasn't going to be not hungry.
Right. I don't know. I don't know how to answer it. I think the best thing that I could say is that this is the drawback and the dilemma where Dan Lanning is not yet as a program, and that is you're still incredibly reliant on plugging holes in the transfer portal. Like, his first full recruiting class is true sophomores right now. And some of those guys are starting to play up front. You know, Jordan James came in with him right away. Like, some of those guys are impact guys, Connerly. But the full roster is not just his recruiting classes yet. And so he still has to go supplement and plug with portal guys. And I do think there's an aspect of last year's team at least had that year before where they had a year to gel and everybody came back for another year. So the continuity was there. They all knew the system. They all knew each other. There weren't a lot of new faces on the team last year. There were a ton in his first year, but not as many last year.
And this is a final year for Stewart, for Gabriel, for Birch.
And you got a lot of guys who came in this year where Gabriel's a hired gun. Muhammad's a hired gun. Kobe Savage is there. I think he's a senior. So you got a lot of guys who were just came in the spring. They came in the summer. You got 1 year here. And so that is the one silver lining I'm trying to tell myself in the back of my head, the optimistic take of, like, they're just trying to find their identity. It's a lot of new faces at key positions. Even when Bedford comes back, that's a guy who's here for a year. He's a transfer portal guy. So figuring out the offense and getting on the same page, like, it just takes time to anybody who's ever played a sport, especially football, it takes a long time to gel. And sometimes you got to go through lumps and play in games to get there. That's the only thing that I can come up with, because everybody that talks to us about their leadership, think about Yogi Roth and what he said about Dylan Gabriel. He's one of the best leaders he's ever been around. So it's hard to look at it and say it's a leadership problem. I think Boss is a great leader on the defensive side of the ball. But
that's why I'm like, is it there's that just or is it something else?
And maybe it's just as simple as the offensive line. I don't, there just seems to be a missing link this year, and it's been hard to put your finger on what it is.
Let's continue on with this. Mike Doc Parker will join us. I want to talk about an aspect of this game that I'm quite fascinated with, and I'll tell you what that is next on The Fan. Mike Doc Parker, the voice of your Oregon State Beavers, will join us coming up here at the bottom of the hour. I haven't talked to Doc in a while, so it'll be nice to catch up with him.
Yeah!
We'll also give an update on the Pac-12 expansion stuff. There haven't been new teams, but there's new intel, and there's new kind of opinions that have rolled in on that.
There were good takes that came out yesterday that it seems like they're going to try and be aggressive and do what I want them to do, which I was happy about.
There's also a number that the AD told Nick Daschle, and so we'll get to all of that stuff coming up today. It is a Spring in Line Friday, so get those Spring in Line sponsors in at the Vancouver Ford text line, which is 503-864-6326. Swag, they treat you right before, during, and after the sale. Dirt, visit them at VancouverFord.com.
Period.
Not so much part of the game. We've talked actually a decent chunk of matchups and, hey, if this team does that, or how's this team going to play that? I'm actually genuinely interested in the atmosphere of Saturday.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be great.
Because the animosity we know is there for Beaver fan who didn't want this game when all of this went down. And now they're 2-0. Now they're in on Brayball. They're running the football effectively. Their defense looks nasty, but it is San Diego State, Idaho State. And in comes Limpy Oregon, who's 2-0, but questioning things and terrified. And what is it going to be? What does it all mean? And maybe TV won't do it justice. I'm not going to the game. I can't go to the game. I'm a coach. But when I sit and watch this game with one of my friends who is a Duck alum and fan, I'm just going to be fascinated turning that thing up, hearing and seeing, does the camera shake? Does it seem louder even through my television than in years past where there have been hostile environments? I'm fascinated by the environment of Reser.
It's the first time they've had a full stadium crowd in a Civil War at home since 2018. You had the COVID year where there were no fans there. I still remember watching that game. What a weird feeling that was. And then the last time when Oregon blew the big lead 2 years ago, that was a half a stadium. That was their half a stadium year. So you got a full crowd, and it's a incredible challenge to have to go into that environment, especially when you're having communication issues when you're playing at home. Mm-hmm. I think that's the big fear for a lot of Oregon fans, is that your offensive line isn't even on the quarterback isn't even on the same page with your checks and calls at the line of scrimmage when you're playing at home,
right?
Let alone going on the road when you're going to be about as hostile as you could ever be. The home crowd is always hostile in a rivalry game, but I think this year more so than any other year in the past, and it's going to be a weird dichotomy of watching this game and the Apple Cup at the same time, where that's a neutral site game. They're going to try and split it 50-50. I hope there's a lot of Cougar fans there, but it won't have the same feel. It'll be corporatized. You're going to have a Alaska Airlines logos out there. Like, it's just dumb, dude. Play the game in Pullman. It should be at Martin Stadium. And so it's a big challenge for Oregon, and they're going to have to figure out how to handle it, because if they want to go on and have a good year, which they might not, but if they want to go on and have a good year, you got to go to Wisconsin late in the season. You got to go to Michigan late in the season. Like, if you've got tough environments down the road for you. Talk about noise, 100,000 people. It's going to be quite loud. And so you're going to have to clear this first hurdle, but it could also be a nice little sign of, hey, maybe they're figuring things out. And if you could get through that, you're not going to face a more hostile crowd the rest of the season than you will face this weekend in Corvallis.
If I've learned anything from going to those games when I was a student to going to those games, being a media member, and randomly as fan, if I've learned anything about that place, I would say it's of the most importance for Oregon to not be having these slow starts that they've had against Idaho, Boise State.
Yeah, you got to get off to a good start.
You come out there and you have a 3-and-out, and then you come out again, you have a 3-and-out with maybe one first down picked up. That's what does it to people in that building. When they have their upsets or when they have their games that are tight and closer than you think going in, it's largely because slow start, you build noise, fans start believing in the upset idea.
Well, the team, I think, starts believing
in the
idea. The
team starts buying into it because it isn't the loudest. It isn't the biggest. They have downgraded the amount of seats with the expansion, I think, for the better. I know you can make fun of that. But there is a special nature to the noise in that building and this internal belief of, we are the underdog here against this team who's favored against us. And so I don't, that doesn't mean Oregon can't get off to a slow start and still end up winning the game comfortably. I would just say the longer you go with a slow start, the more the entire place starts to believe in that stuff because they've seen that magic before.
Well, it gets back to what we talked about out of the Idaho game. An Oregon fan got upset with me saying that they almost lost. It's like, they almost lost the game. It's a one possession game with 4 minutes to go. You're one play away from a bad snap, a funky handoff, a turnover, a stupid deflection. One play away from losing control of the game, even though you led the entire time. There's an aspect of allowing teams to stick around and hang around that they have belief. And if you don't put them away, you're giving yourself the opportunity to make one mistake and to completely change the perplexion of the game. And so I think a fast start is vitally important for Oregon to come out, not only to build some confidence in their own sideline of like, all right, we can do this. We figured it out. Maybe Bedford's playing. Maybe we're running the ball. Like, just to have some confidence in your own sideline, but also to crush it on the other sideline and not let that linger throughout the first three quarters, because if they continue to believe, winning in the fourth quarter is going to be incredibly challenging. Are you guys asking Oklahoma State for cowboy hats again this year? You guys doing that again?
If it leads to a win again.
Yeah.
If we run 19 straight times 19 down your throat straight and times. Win,
yeah.
Give me the assless chaps, man. I'll do anything it takes to win.
Cowboy assless chaps in the stands
yeah,
this week.
Dude.
Just D's out for the Beavs.
Bang, bang. Still very embarrassed by that, but they won, so it's like it's hard to really say too many negative things.
When you win the game, you get the bragging rights. But yeah.
I did find it interesting that next year they had hard hats at the games for students. I'm like, oh, look at that. We finally identified the right hat to be having.
You just get the Home Depot hard hat. That's all you need
That's all we are. Lunch
pail
you,
baby. Lunch pail you. We're going to work. We're clocking in.
We'll get an update on the Pac-12. We'll Sprague the Line. So get those Sprague the Line sponsors into the Vancouver Ford text line, or you can put them on YouTube or Twitter. Doesn't matter. Get them in. We'll get to that at 8:30. Coming up next, we talk to the voice of Oregon State, Mike Doc Parker, with a thought on this game between Oregon, how weird it is to get ready for the Ducks in Week 3, and then his feelings on all this Pac-12 stuff. Mike Doc Parker joins us next on The Fan.
All right, we're talking Civil War in Week 3. None of it feels right, but here we are. The game is tomorrow, and a man who has called many of these games and seen many of these rivalry matchups, one of our favorites, Mike Parker, the voice, longtime voice of the Oregon State Beavers, at MEPOSU on Twitter. Doc, good morning to you. Before we get to the game and just catch up with you, because we love chatting with you, there was a bit of news that came out yesterday, and I'm sure you got tired of talking about it over the last, 18 months or so, not knowing what the future is going to hold, but now we got a little bit of a glimpse of what this will look like for Oregon State. I'm just curious your reaction to the news yesterday and the decision, let's rebuild the conference starting with the four best teams in the Mountain West.
Boys, good morning. And because we've done this long enough, even though I had misgivings early in our on-the-air relationship of calling you guys Dirt and Sprague, it just didn't feel quite right. Good morning, Dirt. Good morning, Sprague.
Nice. It almost felt like a civil war in Week 3, right? It just doesn't quite feel right,
No, it doesn't feel right, but it, whatever the case, I'm honored to be on with you guys. And yes, Andy, to answer your question, I like the fact that going into this game and this early in the year, earlier than I had anticipated, and maybe even a little bit earlier than all the powers that be behind the scenes were working, to create a path forward. Maybe it happened a little more quickly. I think it did. I think we were all caught a little bit. I don't know about you. I wasn't expecting that this week per se, but they Scott Barnes has said that there was a hope to be able to have something ready to announce by the time the rivalry game arrived, and we're on the eve of it now. And it was announced, as you said, yesterday, although our phones were blowing up the night before, and then the news was made official yesterday morning. And I do think it's good news in the sense that there's some definition now. I have a feeling that there still may be some in Beaver Nation and elsewhere, and I get it if there is, that we wanted an invite to the Big 12. We wanted the ACC to implode a little bit and then create the Eastern and Western Coast versions of that league and be in a Power Four and maintain that kind of status with the kind of media rights that could go with that and all of that. I understand that. But as always, another option always on the table was a rebuild of the Pac-12 rather than just being absorbed into another conference. And I see the critics from the outside talking about, well, this is the MW plus version now of the Mountain West. Yeah, I can understand that, but we don't know quite what's going to happen now in completing the rebuild of the Pac-12. But to get, as you said, the four best, the four core members, and to begin to build it out again from there to the required eight, maybe to nine, maybe more. Again, that's what gives Scott Barnes and Ann McCoy some flexibility here now to keep their eyes open, but at least with a plan to know that the plan is we're rebuilding the Pac-12, that the Pac-12 will continue as an entity, and I think that's great news.
Yeah. Well, Doc, I kind of want to follow up. Like, that's good news. There's some certainty here now with the future, a definition as you describe it. I go back a couple months. This blows up about, you know, a little over a year ago, and so Oregon State's kind of left. Where were you on playing this weekend's game? You've been attached to this on both sides, yeah, and largely the Oregon State stuff professionally. Where were you at on this matchup happening? Were you in the, I don't want this game, screw them? Or were you in the, this is familiar territory, we have to have this game? And to kind of follow that up, what you expect this atmosphere to be? Because I've been in some loud ones. I know you've been in several loud ones. This one feels as personal as you could possibly get for a game.
No doubt, Brandon. And you understand that. And I think most people understand that sense of bitterness and anger, resentment, and the never again, we're done with you attitude that's I still hear this week on our local show here in the Mid-Valley, the Joe Beaver Show. We've had calls and texts from people saying, I'm done. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to the game. I'm not watching the game. I'm not even going to listen to the game. I don't know why they would subject themselves to that if they're not going to do the other.
Right.
But you know what I'm saying? But they're not there. So that sentiment, that feeling still exists in some segments. I never was in that camp for several reasons, not out of any, you know, sentimental love for the old alma mater or whatever. No, that wasn't it at all. For me, the idea of playing the game rose for a couple of reasons, that it was a good idea. One, that the Beavers, in trying to build out a schedule and trying to stay as viable and relevant as possible in the 2024 season, before we kind of had a clear definition of a path forward, I thought it was important to have a good schedule. And you knew Oregon was going to be very good. And I know that's part of the rub on the other side, but the idea of being able to play a team like Oregon and follow that up with Purdue, and you still have Cal and Washington State as traditional, you know, Power Four schools on your conference, to have a game like that in your own stadium, I thought made a lot of sense from just a strength of schedule standpoint. To play well in the game seemed to be the original idea. We'll get more to about the game itself now that we're on the eve of it. Playing well may not, you know, that may not be satisfactory enough. Now the Bees, rightly, I feel, think they do have a good shot at winning this football game tomorrow. But beyond all of that, the strength of schedule aspect of it, and more deeply to me, is the fact that this is the 128th edition of the rivalry game that began 130 years ago. And it's just been part of the fabric of our lives. I know it has been. So maybe there is a sentimental twinge. This will be my 52nd consecutive game in person. I've not missed one since I moved to the Beaver State in 1973.
Wow.
And I love the event. This will be the 26th game I've had an honor to call. So to me, it is such a part of what and who we are in this state, that to lose it, even though there may have been reasons to cancel the series and let it simmer for a while and bring it back if the circumstances were right, I think that the television revenue, what the game can mean for the Beavers on the schedule and the strength of schedule and trying to stay relevant, I thought all of those things argued for keeping the game. And now the start of the two teams, even though both, you can't be any better than 2-0, and we get that. But now the game itself, with the news this week, with the national lens from Fox on the game, I think the timing couldn't have worked out any better to play the game and have a good chance to win it, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's really well said, Doc. And I'd be curious to ask all the fans who didn't want it, if Oregon State does win tomorrow, are they singing a slightly different tune? Because I would imagine also, they would be.
Doc, you've been in radio a long time, and I know that Joe Beaver show has a loyal following. You also know, and I know you don't need to say this, they're lying to you. I'm not going to watch. You are going to watch.
They're
going to
check that score. If it's 17-14 in the third quarter, liars. Your eyeballs and ears are going towards that game tomorrow.
You're right, and we have invited back. Hey, anybody, look, if you say you're not going, and somebody just said, you're hiking up Mary's Peak later in the afternoon, and somebody says, hey, the Beavers won. You're invited to come back and call us on Monday to share that how you receive the news. We're not going to, if you say you're boycotting, we're not boycotting you. I remember you guys don't, but I do. I remember in 1994. When the World Series was canceled because of the player strike and there was no World Series, so many people called the show. In fact, it was on the Fan that I was working on on the Fan. Yeah. Everything's on the Fan.
On the Fan, and Doc. I still finish a beer and say on the Fan every time because of Mike Doc Parker.
I've lived most of the rest of my life. I mean, I'm on the plane to San Diego State, and the flight attendant asked, would you like something to drink? Yeah, I think a Diet Pepsi on the Fan. it's that type of thing. I throw it in here and there because it was such a big part of my life in those days. And so on the Fan in 1995, there were callers saying, I'm done with baseball. Baseball's dead to me. Those same voices I remember were reveling over Edgar's hit into the left field corner later that year.
Yeah.
And so, I remember. I thought you were done with baseball. Well, so I think you're right. I think you're on to something. A 3-0 start, a win over the rival, I think might reel back a few people, even if they had left at all.
Yeah, we're talking with Mike Doc Parker, longtime voice of the Beavers, longtime part of this rivalry, the game tomorrow at 12:30. You mentioned a new sense of confidence. I think that's definitely true. But primarily because of the way Oregon has looked. And if you tell me, I'm looking at my team this weekend, Doc, you tell me their offense is funky and their offensive line is an issue, I'm not surprised. The one thing that leaves me somewhat confident is I don't know what to make of Oregon State's offensive passing game. I'm curious what you've seen from that side of the ball and where you think McCoy is at going into week three with a new coordinator and Ryan Gunderson and just what they're doing offensively right now.
It's still an open question. It certainly has not been answered completely. 140 plays, 109 times running the ball, and why not? Because they've ran it very effectively behind a pretty cohesive offensive line that did take a blow with Tyler Bolton out for the year, the starting right guard. But Kyle Devan, the O-line coach, has been rotating players in, and I think in Flavio Gonzalez as a guy that can pick up and continue to perform well. They've been getting good push and movement, and the running backs have shown vision, save for one time. They've also secured the ball and really have had a powerful run game and haven't asked Giovanni, haven't needed him to do a great deal in the passing game. However, the one thing that I was encouraged by last week at San Diego State, that 98-yard drive required they didn't just run it 98 yards. In fact, a couple of the big plays, when they got to second and 25, that looked like that drive was going to be dead, and they were going to have to punt the ball back, still only up one score. And on back-to-back plays, Giovanni hit some big-time throws to get into Aztec territory, complete the drive, and go on to dominate from there and win it 21-0. But not only those types of throws in those situations, I thought his accuracy and arm strength was better for me than I'd seen in either the spring or the fall camp. When I was thinking, what does Gundy have here? What do the Beavers have here in Giovanni McCoy? Well, what they had, it looked to me, on a number of throws, was the guy that lit it up for Idaho, particularly 2 years ago, 27 touchdowns, 7 INTs, and good accuracy. And the arm strength, guys, the ability to throw the hash mark opposite sideline outs to Taz Reddicks and David Wells Jr., hard, accurate, good throws that I hadn't seen in the Idaho State game. And so it was enough. It was enough to convince me that Gundy's got some things up his sleeve that are going to help him continue to grow. We haven't seen the best of him yet. We haven't needed to. Probably will need to against a great secondary that leads the country, Oregon does, and passes defended It's a really good, physical, long, talented, fast group. So we'll find out this Saturday how far Giovanni's come. But so far, his growth from the spring to fall camp to where he is now, it looks to me like he's growing into the quarterback they need him to be, particularly this Saturday.
At risk of upsetting my producer, I have to ask you this because you just brought it to my head in thinking about Gundy. He was there long ago with Riley as one of the quarterback, you know, coaches and helping out. He leaves, he departs to Nebraska, he goes on this journey, he's back now. He played in this rivalry, he won't lean into it, he doesn't want bulletin board material. Just being around him, it's been a few years since you saw him last in Corvallis as an assistant, and now he's the play caller. Have you noticed any changes, any difference in Ryan Gunderson, the OC, from what he was once upon a time, the player slash assistant coach?
He's always been a very astute observer of the game. That was one of the things that was evident when he was playing here, albeit primarily in a backup role. He did start in a Fog Bowl Civil War game that, you know, after Matt Moore went down in 2005. He's always been shrewd and observant and somewhat understated in all of that. Not a real, you know, rah-rah, fiery sort of personality guy when he was a player. And this, I've seen him off and on through the years at the various stops, and it's clear that the maturation of his offensive philosophy is, that's on display in his confidence. That's the thing I like most about Ryan, is he feels coacherly. I mean, he understands what he's up to, and even I think he had a momentary snide remark in fall camp where he said, look, I'll do the coaching of a team and you can write your stories or whatever. Right. I can't remember whom the interlocutor was, but I remember thinking some people could take that the wrong way and think, what kind of jerk? No, there was nothing jerkish or rude per se. It was a statement made out of, I know what I'm doing. And I feel like that's the vibe he's conveyed since I've seen him last, when we were around him more back in his playing days, and I haven't seen a lot of him since. But it's clear that the tutelage he's received under good coaches like Coach Riley and Brent Brennan, Chip Kelly, and his own mind, he's put together concepts, ideas that he owns. And we've only seen just a touch of some of the stuff that's yet to come. But I know he's confident in how he's grown as a coach and what he is able to convey to his players how to execute. I think he's just a really mature young man. It's great to have a former Beaver back in that role.
Yeah, Mike Doc Parker is one of our favorites, longtime voice of the Oregon State Beavers. Congrats on calling yet another Civil War tomorrow. It's weird to have it in September, but I'm sure some of that normalcy will come when we see the orange and the black and the green and the yellow on the field. And it is always great to have you on the Fan, Doc. Have a great call tomorrow, and hopefully we can do this again soon.
Well, it is nice to actually be, you know, when I throw my references out, even on a jog in Corvallis on occasion, somebody will say, hey, Mike, how's it going? Yeah, I'm great on the Fan. You know, so it's nice to actually be occasionally with you guys on the real Fan, on the Fan. And so thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward. Brandon, you allude to the atmosphere. Look, it'll be rowdy and rollicking, and it'll be a fun place to be. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. Doc Parker, great stuff from the longtime voice of Oregon State on the Fan. He said that for years. It's a great story, and it speaks to the lineage of this great radio the Portland sports leader has with Mike Doc Parker.
Learned it years ago and getting a beverage with him amongst many others. He ended it. He put the thing down. He said, on the fan. And I said, what? And he explained it to me, and ever since then, every time I finish something, on the Fan.
On the Fan. Let's wrap up our conversation on this game. Your thoughts are welcome to the Vancouver Ford text line. Back after this.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure?
Don't sit here and act like there's no... We get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch time. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. With memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
Hey, crunch time. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Memberships as low as $9.99 a month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, online at crunch.com. We will spring the line coming up in the final hours. Keep your fake sponsors rolling in. We got some good ones early on. I wanted to read this question, the Vancouver Ford text line, as we wrap up our Civil War conversation. We got a poll question on it. We'll get to that at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said, there's one side of the Civil War game I haven't really heard discussed at all this week from you guys, and that is the ramifications of a Beaver victory for the rest of their season.
Oh, I mean, the reason I would say we haven't really talked about that is because I think it's fairly obvious. If they win that game,
yeah,
the expectations change to 11-1, maybe undefeated. I just, there's no other way around that. You can say that's unrealistic or, oh, it's ridiculous, it's one game. You're certainly right on the one game part. You beat a team of the talent of Oregon. I don't care that they're coming in limpy on the offensive line or questioning some things. You win that game, I don't want to see you lose to Purdue. There's nobody in the Mountain West until maybe Boise State. Maybe.
Last week of the season.
Like, if you stay healthy, that's...
The Cougs look good too early on. We'll see what they do tomorrow as well.
Yeah,
Cal, by the way, let's not sleep on Cal either, man. They're going in SEC country and getting wins. That seemed like a layup maybe at the start of the year, and maybe Cal's good this year.
I think Auburn really sucks. I don't think they have a quarterback, like, whatsoever.
That's part of it.
But certainly, I guess. But if you beat Oregon, why can you not beat Cal?
Yeah.
Why can't you beat Washington State? And... look, health has to stay in your favor, but if you win, to answer that question, that's absolutely where you're going.
Last thought on it, I'm just curious at where, you know, one listener texted in, I wanted to read this, Beaver fan, not a super optimistic Beaver fan.
Okay.
And basically said, some OSU fans would have you believe the Beavers are going to unleash a passing attack. They haven't put any on film. Are you kidding me? Yeah, don't get that passing game going at all to debut it against your toughest opponent. It's so dumb. He said, the only reason I'm even watching the game is I was invited over by family. I hate that OSU is playing this game.
Mm.
It's a paycheck game. That's bleep. Where are you at on Javonte McCoy going into this game? And does he matter to you, or is this a simple as if you can't run the football, you can't win, or you...
Yes.
Yes. As simple as that.
I don't trust Javonte McCoy. It's year one for him at Oregon State. He has not played a team the talent caliber of what Oregon has. This is not San Diego State, man. This is not Idaho State. This is a different ballgame. They gave up some big runs, but they largely have been the only positive, real consistent thing for Oregon. That defensive line is filthy. Birch and Harmon have been absolute monsters. Uwe Ungalale can randomly make a massive play as well. They're dealing with offensive line problems. If their run game is slowed down, I don't give them a shot. Mm. Not a shot.
I
kind of wonder if it gets into that absolute blowout territory. I can't trust a passing game. What would I trust? They run it clean, a guy drops a flea flicker pass.
Yeah.
He overthrew people. He had some misthrows. They were fine. But overall, like, yeah, I don't have enough trust in their passing game to say they could beat Oregon if they can't run the football.
Doc mentioned that 2nd and 25 that they overcame largely because of a screen pass that picked up the bulk of it. That ended up being the kind of icing touchdown. Just something to keep an eye on. Oregon's defense has been really bad against screen passes this year. Idaho got them on a couple in the first week. Also, I guarantee you Oregon State's got a random wild card joker up their sleeve, and there's going to be a trick play at some point. And Idaho hit them for a touchdown on a trick play. So just two things to keep an eye on.
I really do. I want to add quickly, I hate that in the way of, yes, you're right, but I hate that we're contributing that to passing game. These little bubble dumps that are 2 yards, like, I'm not, come on. That's offensive linemen being on their assignments and running backs finding the right lanes to go down. That's not me going, McCoy was awesome. He threw a 3 yard pass to Hankerson who took it 50 yards.
Right.
That's not a McCoy thing. That's execution by everybody else.
And it's setting up the defense for a screen, no doubt. We got a lot to get to in the final hour of the show. Some fun random notes out of the college football game from last night that I would like to talk about. We will give you a week 3 preview slate. Any upsets out there? Well, there were a few last week. Some thoughts on the Apple Cup as well. We got Sprague in the line coming up at 8:30. It is a loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fam.